Stop. Stop. Will you? Stop, Dave. Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
All right, we took some time off for the holidays, and now we're back. We're going to start a new series of episodes here. We're going to talk about state sovereignty for a few weeks. This came up for me, anyway, in the last week or so when I had some discussions with people about exactly what state sovereignty means. And it occurred to me at that time that that there's a lot of people that just probably don't totally get and maybe aren't ready for state sovereignty. That you, Kevin?
Yes, it is, Dave. How are
and
you?
I'm good. How are you tonight?
Good. Good. Sorry, I was having a little bit of problems. This isn't where I usually log in from, and
yeah.
And I was kind of wondering for a little bit if I was going to make it.
Well, I'm glad you're here. This is Kevin. He's going to. Kevin is you'll all remember Kevin, the hillbilly from Hillbilly Logic, and he's going to sit in with us from time to time, more than less, I hope. And we're looking forward to that. So,
Dave,
pretty
can
cool.
You hear me fine on this?
I can hear you fine. Can you hear me fine?
Good. Yes,
good.
I can.
Okay, folks, anyway, it's 347-677-1835. That's 347-677-1835. As I was saying, we're gonna talk for a few weeks here about state sovereignty. I'm looking forward to this chat. We want to hear from you. What do you think state sovereignty means? It means something when we say things like states' rights, when we say things like state sovereignty. I was talking with a good friend this afternoon who will be joining us next week on Friday night, and he says, I kind of hate to hear people use the word state sovereignty. He says that it brings back queasy feelings of the old king, you know, the sovereign of kingship, of monarchy, of rulerdom. So let's hear from you. What do you think state sovereignty means? What does states' rights mean? What does state rules mean? And meanwhile, Kevin and I will just bash some stuff around here, and we'll hear from some of you. And then once we've batted that around a little bit, we'll get back to it, and we'll get into state sovereignty and what it means to me, anyway. But there's some news, Kevin. Obamacare continues to implode upon itself. Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
I've had several long discussions with people this week. Did you know that in Missouri, if you're 29 years old, the best, least expensive plan you can get is going to run you $172 a month and is going to carry with it a $6,500 deductible.
Now, I have yet, and I don't know if you have or not, but I have yet to meet anyone whose premiums actually went down.
And
I'm talking about of everyone that I've talked to. And these are those middle-aged, some of them. I know one that is going to school and working at Target, and his premiums went, they jumped up over $100 a month. And, you know, again, for less.
Right.
You know, it seems to me, Dave, that we are absolutely going in the opposite direction. If this was really about getting everybody insured and making sure that people don't lose their homes and everything else, the route of catastrophic insurance and medical savings plans seems like the only logical course to me. It would have been, but what do? They restricted medical savings plans. They've cut the amount that you can contribute into flex pay accounts, and that's crazy all the way around.
It is. And so here you've got this 29-year-old guy who, say, this time last year decided, because he's in fairly good health, that he didn't want insurance, a logical decision. We could argue about the wisdom of the decision, but it's a logical decision. And now he has to pay $172 a month for a premium, and he's in the same position he was this time last year because he's got to spend $6,500 before his insurance even kicks in. So he is, for all intents and purposes, still, after paying $172 premium, uninsured. He's still got to pay if he goes to the doctor. He's still got to pay if he breaks his arm. He's still got to pay if he catches pneumonia and needs to go see the doctor two or three times and get some antibiotics. He's still got to pay all of those bills 100% because nothing has happened to him that's catastrophic enough to cost him $6,500 yet.
Absolutely. Now, on the other hand, would not it have – a lot of these catastrophic plans really would cover very little to nothing until you reached a certain amount, and then some of them would start kicking in at 100%. You know,
right.
So, you know, if you're looking at medical savings plans, it makes all – if you're really wanting to go after insurance – as far as make sure that people are covered and are not going to be financially bankrupt, that's the route to go, not what we're seeing.
That's exactly right. This 29-year-old guy last year at this time, well, year before last, because insurance companies started trying to get ahead of the game last year, 2 years ago at this time, he could have bought that catastrophic plan you're talking about for $61, $62 a month. Wouldn't pay a dime until he came up with something that was going to cost him $10,000 or more, and then it would have paid everything above that. So he's not going to lose his house if he gets in a horrible car accident.
Right.
He's not going to lose his house if he has a stroke or a heart attack, needs a quadruple bypass. But yet, for $62 a month, he is expected to reach into his own pocket if he has to go to the doctor because he's got the sniffles. People like that use the doctor more sparingly, too.
Absolutely. And also,
you know,
if you had it in a savings account, you would have a tendency to do more of that, too.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Now, the flip side of this is, as you alluded to this earlier, as people go to the website, as people go to healthcare.gov or to their state exchange, they're being encouraged to see if they don't qualify for some lowered premiums or even Medicaid. And as it turns out, Medicaid signups are besting insurance purchases by 4 to 1. So 4 people are signing up for Medicaid for every one that purchases insurance on an exchange or at healthcare.gov for those of us in states that opted not to form an exchange. These people, Kevin, who have no vested interest, who pay no premium, they don't have a deductible.
Right.
They go to the doctor when they get a cold. They go to the doctor when they break their toenail. They go to the doctor for anything and everything, and the doctor gets paid 40 cents on the dollar by the federal government, i.e. you and me.
Absolutely. Now,
it's a crazy upside-down system.
Sorry.
Go ahead. No,
It is a crazy upside-down system. You know, if you looked at let's just say that the medical savings plans and the flex pay accounts. Now, the flex pay accounts, you could take up to a certain amount pre-tax dollars out of your account. I mean, whenever you're getting paid It would just be diverted into a savings account for you, and you could use that card to purchase any over-the-counter goods that that were medically involved, even eyeglasses, anything like that, aspirin, anything that was over-the-counter that dealt with medicine or medicinal yep. purposes. And you got more bang for your buck already right off the bat, you know, because it was pre-tax dollars. Now, all of a sudden, they've capped that significantly lower. You know, you've looked at a situation where medical where the catastrophic insurance, you weren't even able to get it. And it just everything that was done in just the opposite direction of what common sense would have dictated it be.
So I heard Rand Paul on the radio today projecting that by the end of this year, Democrats are going to be begging the Republicans to kind of help them get out of this.
That wouldn't surprise me at all, and I would say that a lot of the Republicans will be more than happy to jump in there and participate in this tinkering and try to just kind of carve out certain areas that they kind of like as popular, and you know it's just going to be once again a mess. I hate to say it, I've got very little confidence that this is going to end well.
I'm very fortunate myself, and I, you know, I'd like to say this when I rant about Obamacare as just part of a disclaimer, but you know, I'm very fortunate. I'm a retired military guy, so you taxpayers are providing me with pretty good insurance for the time being, anyway, until McCain gets a hold of it and trashes that too. But I've been very lucky. I know some people who aren't as lucky,
Now, I understand what you're saying, and there's another case though, Dave. Many of our veterans are really having they've had a very difficult problem being entered into that system. You know, and a lot of them that have come back and tried to work even from the Middle East with different injuries that were sustained, the hours of operation for the doctors that they must see conflicted many times with their schedule of work whenever they were trying to work beyond their injuries. And, you know, if you're a no-show, you get pretty much dropped. So it's not a very friendly system from what I've seen on the outside, and my father's a North Korean veteran. He's dealt with that for quite a while. We had the situation too, where in St. Louis at John Cochran, where we had thousands of veterans potentially exposed to AIDS virus through the dental department. You know,
wow.
There are actually several of them did contract it. They've had many, many instances of very difficult, that should have been avoidable instances. I'm sorry, but, you know, things like hygiene and cleaning equipment and everything else is a very avoidable situation. And they just
right. That's right. And just for the sake of our listeners, what you're talking about, Kevin, is the VA system. Now, the VA system is a military veteran service designed for people who spent some time in the military and were either medically retired or who sustained some sort of disability or injury while they were serving their country. That's different than the insurance plan that a person who spent 25 or 30 years and retired has. What a retiree has is an actual insurance policy. I can go to the doctor of my choice and they pay the bill. A great portion of the bill. It's a very good policy. It has a low deductible and a relatively low out-of-pocket maximum, and it pays anywhere between 60% and 80% of the bill when you go to the doctor, depending upon what you have done. The VA system, though, as you're pointing out, though, Kevin, is a total disaster. Always has been, yeah. and isn't getting any better. It certainly is dreadful. Veterans here in Springfield have to drive to either Mount Vernon or down to Fayetteville, Arkansas, to get to the closest two hospitals for VA. It's I don't want to say inept. I'm sure the doctors there are.
Well, there's the catch. You know, I mean, there are individuals within the system that care. There are individuals within the system that try to provide the best possible care that they can under the red tape and the restrictions within they operate. Now, we're not trying to slam everybody in the system, I'm sure. But the system itself is inept. The system itself actually puts these people in a position that they can't perform the services to the level that they should be able to. Does that fairly accurate, you think?
You know, I think so, Kevin. I don't really know a whole lot about the system. I do know several guys who travel down to Mount Vernon once in a while, but I don't really know the system at all, except what I read in the newspaper and see on the TV.
And it's constantly, you know, the constraints are constantly getting tighter and tighter on the participants. They put out time limits. I know that for a fact because my father's feet was frozen in Korea, and if you didn't get in by a certain date, once they finally professed that was a serious issue during that war, if you didn't get in within so much of a time frame, then it didn't matter. You were going to be locked out of the system.
Wow.
And you know, and here we've got situations where we are hiring people to go out into neighborhoods and have people check with people to see if they qualify for food stamps and getting them on the rolls. In the meantime, we're giving veterans timetables that many of them may not be in communication with and may not even know exists, may not even know that it was available, and we're cutting them off, you know, before on a hard deadline. And that is insane.
It is.
At any level.
It's crazy.
And just like with you, I've got no beef whatsoever with our veterans receiving good medical policies. Our retirees, our injured in war, you know, I'm sorry, but there is a earned value that and respect that I believe that that they deserve. I've always grown up in affiliations. I spent much of my youth out at the VFW around veterans. You know, overall, I admire and love the caliber of people that I have known through the years.
Well, so anyway,
Dave,
that's
just one of them, bud.
Well, thanks, Kevin.
You're welcome.
Kevin was up my way on Veterans Day, bought my lunch for me, met his wife. We had a good time. Yeah.
That was our very first time that we actually got to meet face-to-face.
Meet face-to-face, that's right. We'll do it again, though, soon.
Absolutely.
So anyway, just shake your head at this VA and then think about that 10 times worse than what you got on your hands what we call the Affordable Care Act. Just to escape the troubles and problems of the United States of America for a minute or two, let's assume that we want to go down to Antarctica and do a research project on how badly the ice cap down there is damaged because of global warming. And what do you suppose would happen to us if we did that?
Well, I would say that we would get locked in a huge chunk of ice and have to be rescued by helicopter.
Well, that can't be. No, that can't be because the ice is not there anymore.
Well, surprise.
I know for a fact the ice isn't there anymore. I heard Al Gore say so.
Right. No, they're, it's the lunacy just abounds all around us, I hate to say.
It does, doesn't it?
It does.
But they've rescued the trapped scientists, and you'll not. It's going to be interesting here in the next. It's going to take 2 or 3 weeks for them to thaw out a bit, I suppose, and then it's going to be very interesting to see the spin that comes out of this, Kevin. There's going to have to be some reason why. I've already had. We've been talking, and my goodness gracious sakes, Kevin, these people headed down there into what satellites have been showing them for 6-8 months was record ice cap, record ice growth in both the Arctic and Antarctic this past season. It's summer down there, Kevin, and they're trapped in the ice.
Right.
My gosh.
It's an unbelievable amount. I think it goes beyond denial. I think actually what we're witnessing is a world religion.
Oh, it is. It is. This whole global warming thing, you hit the nail on the head there. It is a religion, isn't it?
It is a religion. I mean, you have to – it is something that they've taken on solely by faith. And granted, they have slanted – any kind of evidence that they have, they will knowingly leave things out. They will knowingly record things in error. NASA's been caught twice recording inaccurate temperatures globally, twice with Steve Hansen, who heads the department on climate research at NASA. They've caught him twice entering the wrong information. And do you think anything's done? No. We have ClimateGate. We have all these other things where they actually intercept emails and have turned things loose. You know, there is so much hypocrisy. Then we have a guy in Al Gore who was a consultant for Europe, helped to dictate a lot of their policy, comes over here, testifies before Congress, turns around and is on a talk show, talks about just a few meters under the earth, it being millions of degrees, when the surface of the sun is 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, this is a guy that's helping to set policy and create law to deal with restrictions on people and how we live our lives. He should have been put in prison, in my opinion.
He
don't get any more of a fraud. And he is the first so-called green billionaire. You know, it's lunacy.
It is, and you've hit you've hit something there that we've been saying for a decade now, and this is 100% about the money and the power.
Absolutely, it is, and the control.
And the power.
It is about creating a new world currency.
Yep,
and I don't care how they look at it. You know, if you start going in the direction of carbon credits, Dave, let's just say like actually Europe was going to do. England in 2011 was going to implement a credit card that only allowed so many carbon credits per month. It didn't matter how much money you had. So let's say that you went to a grocery store and whatever number they assigned something in carbon credits, let's say milk. Anything else? All right, a gallon of milk is 3 carbon credits. So whatever they believed that they wanted to control or dictate your buying patterns, they would just elevate those carbon credits. And unless you purchased them from somebody else that didn't use theirs, your money was useless if you wanted to purchase. So in my eyes, that's a new currency. Because if you can't buy something, no matter what your finances are, because you don't have these so-called credits on your card that would be swiped, it's a currency.
Yep. And you get the jackpot if you get 666 credits.
Yes, you do. Actually, yeah, if you look at it, you know, you can't buy, sell, or trade, right? Unless you get those carbon credits. So And the only thing that stopped that whole thing, the only thing that ceased that from being implemented was the global slowdown that hit the world in 2008.
Wow.
Otherwise, that would be in full blow. And that is all factual. I mean, there is nothing that's speculation. There's no. I mean, that is stuff that, you know, one could research and just look at the history. And like I said, Al Gore went over there and testified and actually was a paid consultant for Europe during this whole process. And it's, I mean, I don't know how many times you can go back to lunacy, but actually that one area is the largest grab of power in world history if they were able to accomplish this. And that's why the ends justify the means.
Wow. Yep. That's right. Okay, so what else is happening in the news there, Kevin?
I saw something that was pretty amazing, really. I mean, you know, often we hear North Korea. And again, this is this kind of world news, but world news does affect the state of Missouri. You know, we're not on an island. So Kim Jong-un, or Un, I guess is how you would pronounce it, the leader of North Korea. Did you see anything about him executing his uncle?
I did. Yep.
I
did see that and thought of a couple of uncles of my own, but go ahead.
Well, did you see the manner in which he did it?
No, I didn't.
No, and it's probably not going to be highly publicized. But even reports within the own country and in their own papers, and I can't remember, I'd have to look, but there's a specific name that is used for this type of corporal punishment. But what they did, Dave, was they starved 120 dogs, and they took him and a handful of his aides, his personal aides, and they threw him in the pen naked with these 120 dogs and let the dogs consume them.
Oh, wow.
That's Kim Jong-un and 300 of his top henchmen watched the spectacle, and they said that it took roughly about an hour for the dogs to finish the job as far as consuming all of them. And that, I'm telling you, if that doesn't shock somebody, nothing will, because you got to figure, this is a guy that we're supposed to be negotiating with. How do you negotiate with somebody of that mindset?
Oh, yeah, that's, you know, it's absolutely insane. The way, just our entire foreign policy, I mean, this guy has not a clue, just not a clue on how to project America overseas.
It's it's crazy. I mean, it was called Quan Ju, which is in English execution by dogs. But that is and actually it was a nice way to spend Christmas Eve because it was December 24th.
Oh, is that when they did it?
That's yeah.
Wow, it seemed like it was yeah. Wow.
That's crazy. But it goes to deal with, you know, those that believe that we're in a bubble. And that everybody is of an equal mental stability.
Yeah.
And they're not. You get some really whacked out people that had these nations sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a, you know, that guy's an absolute raving lunatic.
Absolutely. And then not to just coin your phrase. Between lunacy, I've used that several times tonight, unfortunately. But yeah, there's all kinds of different things. Does anybody you want to? I don't have the number in front of me. Do you want to throw out the number in case somebody wants to call in and talk about state sovereignty?
347-677-1835. We're going to take a quick break and we'll come back, and then Kevin and I are going to start talking about it. 347-677-1835.
There's a conflict in every human heart between the rational and the irrational, between good and evil. And good does not always triumph. Sometimes the dark side overcomes what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. The government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
All right, had a little technical difficulty there in the studio, but we're back now. I'm Dave. This is Kevin. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Dave.
And
glad to be on here with you tonight.
It's great. So you know, Some 280 years ago, some people formed some colonies here, and they were running away from a tyrannical system. They were running from a king who believed that he was given some sovereign power by God to dictate life and death. To dictate who could and couldn't own property. And so they came here to form a new land. And after a little while, they decided to declare themselves independent from the tyrant, and they fought a long and bloody war to secure that independence. And then shortly after that, they got together and formed a government. And that government stands today, more or less, as the Constitution of the United States. I say more or less, and we deal with that in another series of shows where we try to get the Constitution back. But for now, what we want to talk about is what these people had in mind when they wrote that Constitution. And to the man, when they went to Philadelphia, their intent and their purpose in even recognizing that they needed some central government, because there were things that the states themselves couldn't do, but their intent and purpose was to maintain the sovereignty of their own states and limit as much as possible the power of the central government. Don't you think?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's very accurate.
So now we get down to a time today when the central government has become overpowerful and continues to suck power up to itself like a vacuum. And we find the states standing out here screaming again for something they call state sovereignty. And we come up with trying to define what that is. And there seems to be, I think, Kevin, a little misunderstanding by some people about what exactly state sovereignty is. Do you find that to be the case when you go out and around?
You know, I was hoping to get educated on this program tonight, Dave, by you. I will have to say, you know what, I'm not as learned in this area as I'd like to be. I know that many terms are bantered around and maybe not fully understood by those that use them, and I may have been guilty of that in some circumstances for sure. But I just know that you know, looking at the quotes, I love to go back and look at and that's the best way, actually. Things can be taken out of context. They can be everything else. And you could do that by going back and just grabbing quotes, too. Don't
sure.
get me wrong. But I mean,
yeah.
I, in reading multiples or else even complete volumes on some of the founders and some of the other ideas that was shared and quite often heated battles, it's pretty interesting. You kind of derive, I think, a closer picture of exactly where they were wanting to go or what they expected. Does that sound like that's an accurate
situation? I believe you're right. What we have here is we have a situation where what the people wanted, now this is the way I see it, okay? This is in my mind. What these guys wanted was, they wanted a government. They were well read in Locke and the other libertarians of the day, and they wanted a government where the people were as free to be individuals as they could be. But what I hear now from patriots is things that border on anarchy. I have this God-given right to do this. Well, I've been Genesis through Revelation more than once, and I don't see God specifying anywhere that you have a right to carry a gun. I don't see God specifying anywhere that you have a right to print anything you want to in a newspaper. I don't see God specifying anywhere. So what we've done is we've taken this God-given right and we've stretched it to the maximum. And the fact of the matter, though, Kevin, and you and I both know, is that you do have a God-given right, and that right is singular. There is one God-given right. And that right is free will.
I agree.
God says, thou shalt not kill, and God says, you have free will. Here's the penalty. Here's the rule. You have free will. Do as you please.
Often, you know, that's like somebody compelling their religion. I think it's great to share it, and I think I understand certainly because I feel the same, and that is, you know, I mean, if you put it on the simplest terms, if you go out and you enjoy a movie, you know, you share that with friends. If you think it's something of eternal damnation, you're definitely going to want to share it with those that you care about. But at the same time, to compel and to try to force at gunpoint or through capital punishment or any other means to compel a religion on a person, you know, God didn't do that.
He
God
did,
gave us
exactly.
free will.
He didn't himself. That's right. He said.
He didn't himself. So who are we to try to impose our faith on another when the Creator didn't do it? So I mean that's where I think we have to really be careful too.
So in fact, the human being is sovereign unto himself in the eyes of God. You are your own ruler. You are your own person. You make your own choices, exercising your own free will that God gave you, and therein lies the quote-unquote God-given rights.
And, well, Dave, wouldn't it be kind of along the lines, too, that regardless of how much I care for another, in my faith, I can't save that person.
True.
So, you know, we're back again to that sovereign will, and we don't always, you know, I've heard people profess that something wicked that they did must have been the will of God, you know, and that's not so.
Oh, yeah. That's
people,
true.
People twist and contort things that is unbelievable.
Yeah.
So and they continue to.
And will because ever. Of that. Because of that, Kevin, what we have to do now we could all live with this. I have a God-given right. The fact of the matter is, you have a God-given right to kill your neighbor if he pisses you off because he plays his music too loud. God gives you the right to disobey. God gives you the free will to do as you please. Here's the penalty for doing it, but you have the free will to do it. So right. If we lived in this everyone is sovereign society, we would have an anarchy. My rules apply, and your rules apply, and the next door neighbor's rules apply, and Charles Manson's rules apply to Charles Manson. And if that's the world you want to live in, everybody living with their God-given right to do as they please, then more power to you. I say that in a civilized society, we must come to a point where we say to one another, there's got to be some rules. There's got to be some rules.
Here's the danger within that, Davey. I understand exactly where you're coming from, and I do. Here's where, just like I was talking about, whenever people say that, I know I did this heinous thing, but it must have been God's will. And if it's kind of crazy, but people always take things to the extreme, and you could and someone could take exactly what you're saying to the extreme on the other side. Where we might, let me give you a scenario. I mean, you know, whenever I'm 48 years old, when I was a kid, my parents, you know, good parents, but they would usher you outside and say, go play. You know, they didn't want you in the house all day, everything else. And you're out playing in the woods. You're at your neighbors. I mean, we lived in a pretty rural area. And a lot of times they wouldn't know. They didn't really care so much as long as you got home whenever you were supposed to be home. And the point is there's tens of thousands of more laws on the books to protect children, but I am not convinced by no means that children are safer today than they were when I was a kid. So it's not, and therein lies, we create all these laws constantly because, honestly, man has absolved himself of personal responsibility. And the more that we absolve ourselves of personal responsibility, the more laws we have to create. And the more laws we create, the more man absolves himself from further personal responsibility. And it's a slippery slope that we are in full force going down now. I do believe that we can create way too much in the forms of our laws and restrictions to live together. What we're not missing is laws. We got more laws than we ever need on the books. What we're missing is we've lost our moral compass. We've lost our guidance. And unless you've got that, you know, if you look at what's a prison cell? A prison cell is what, about 8x6, I think? Especially
never
if
been.
You start talking
never
about. Well, you know, man's ultimate attempt to control, to make people conform is a prison cell. And yet people will commit crimes and find themselves behind those bars. And what will we do? We'll try to protect them in the prison cells by putting huge restrictions on them, suicide watches, not giving them belts, all these other scenarios, and yet people commit suicide in solitary confinement. Yet people are murdered behind bars inside of a confined prison. So it's not the laws that I believe we've got way too many. And the more that we produce, the more people absolve themselves of personal responsibility and look for government to fill that void.
So the answer is we don't have any laws? Is that the answer?
No, absolutely
okay.
Not. That's
so,
therein lies where we have to have some common sense and not define everything down to where we try to force somebody to well, I guess we absolve them of personal responsibility and just give it to the state. You know, that I see more than anything today. And it's not just the federal government that we have to worry about. We have the ability to change our local governments easier than we do the federal. And I am a firm believer that we need to just limit the federal government to its enumerated powers. And I think you are too.
On
the enumerated powers. Now, that doesn't mean that a state, out of its foolishness, cannot offer and give up more power to the government than what the government actually possesses. Does that sound correct, too?
Well, what we're trying to do right now is define where the power should lie. Where we got to was, there have to be some rules.
Yes.
I mean, we can't have
anarchy. I think we can all agree with that.
We can't have everyone making their own rules. You know, I can't decide that it is my God-given right to sit naked in my front yard on Monday morning as all the kids go by to school.
No. And here's the kicker, Dave. I mean, isn't that scriptural, too, when we say that every man does what is right in his own eyes?
Well, yeah.
I mean,
but,
so that's not necessarily a good thing.
So the question becomes then, where does that sovereignty lie? And you hear people say things like, well, the state doesn't have the right to tell me. The state doesn't have the right to do this. Well, states don't have rights. Rights are things that belong to individual human beings and individual human beings only. Rights do not belong to states. We don't give states rights. We give states power.
And the authority.
And there's a lot of difference between a right and a power. Now, in establishing these rules, the first thing we have to decide is what is the best level, and you alluded to this earlier, for these rules to be established. And the founders decided that the best level was the state. The state
Yes.
is going to be our sovereign. The state is going to be our, and here I'm going to really shock my buddy who's listening tonight, the state is going to be the king. The state is going to decide how fast you can drive down the interstate highway, and that you can't sit in your front yard naked, and that you can't. And then we get to the point of why is the state sovereign? And I get frustrated when I have these discussions with people, because the way this thing even came up, Kevin, was there was another one of these discussions about the Second Amendment Preservation Act, and I made the mistake of jumping into the middle of it when someone said, well, the state of Missouri can't do anything that takes away my Second Amendment right, and that, if you understand a darn thing about state sovereignty, is totally wrong. The Second Amendment of the United States Constitution bears no limitation on the state of Missouri. It does not limit the power of the state of Missouri one little bit. It limits the power of the federal government. The state of Missouri, as your sovereign, can still tell you can't carry a gun.
I understand what you're saying, and whenever you look at the improper context, I believe you're correct. Now,
okay.
That is what I was talking about whenever I said when the people will also, they will give up these rights knowingly, either through voting or through poor selection of their representatives. You know, it doesn't mean that these things cannot be imposed upon the people.
That's right. But, and that is the beauty of state sovereignty. State
right.
sovereignty is the level, the one level, where you, Kevin, and me, and everyone listening to this show actually has control. So if we say the state of Missouri is making too many laws, we've nowhere to point that finger but at ourselves.
Right.
You know?
No,
I mean,
true.
We continue to vote for people to go to Jefferson City. And when I say people to go to Jefferson City, look at the Missouri State House of Representatives, listeners. You can impact the Missouri State House of Representatives by impacting a 100-square-block area. That's a Saturday afternoon. That's a Saturday
That's
afternoon.
True.
You know, you read and read and read and all the political science stuff that in order to affect an election, you've got to make a contact with each voter at least three times. Okay, that's three Saturday afternoons.
Right.
In a 100-square-block area, and you win a seat in Jefferson City. Maybe not for you, but for the man or woman you're working for. For the
right.
constitutional representative in Jefferson City, Missouri. And that's one house, the House of Representatives, that you can impact by working a 100-square-block area on 3, 6, 9 Saturday afternoons. Two Saturday afternoons, if you've got 10 other people helping you out, you can put a good representative in one of the houses in Jefferson City. And Kevin, what you're talking about now is not the power to make good law, because that's only one house, but one house can stop bad law.
Absolutely, and I think that is even more critical.
It's more
than
critical.
Producing good laws.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. So,
and there's where I think a lot of people really, Dave, and I'm sure you've seen this, and it frustrates you as much as it does me. Not trying to put words in your mouth, but whenever people support bad legislation because they like or trust who is in power, but then they will oppose legislation that makes sense foundationally because they oppose who is in control at the time, those are the two most damaging things I think that we can do to ourselves.
Let's see, can we say Romney Care, Obamacare?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Or
you know, the Patriot Act. You know, I mean,
yeah,
and then,
exactly right.
I there were so many that did not oppose it because, you know what, George Bush was in control.
Yeah.
And there were so many that did oppose it because George Bush was in control. Now they support it.
Yep.
Because their guy's in control.
That's
kind
right.
of insanity has got to stop.
It does. That's
where it's lost. And we yep. need some intellectual honesty amongst the voters to not just buy into the party lines, to not just be blind supporters. They remind me of the parent that goes to the school and chews out the teacher for disciplining their child. You know, it's insane. We've got to hold our elected folks responsible for the actions that they do and the actions they don't do. I mean, and that doesn't mean just beat up on them. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying we cannot blindly support something that is bad legislation because we like who's in power. We ought to pay more attention to the legislation that's being presented when we're in power, the party that we like is in power, than when they're not. It's more dangerous. Because
I've
it's
never,
easier for
yeah.
them to pass.
Yes. I'll tell you right now, I'm neither a conservative nor a liberal. I'm probably libertarian, but I don't ever like to see veto-proof legislatures. I don't ever like to see all three branches of the government in the same hands.
I hate to say it, whenever they're talking about harmony in Congress, I'm feeling the urge to reach over and grab my ankles.
Yeah, that's
because,
right.
Because we're about to take it, literally. And whenever they are all kind of in harmony and agreement, they're it's usually not a good sign. I mean, I hate to say that, but the devil's in the details. You know, if I could, Dave, there's a letter from Thomas Jefferson to Joseph C. Cable, and it's out of the writings of Thomas Jefferson. It was actually dated February 2nd, 1816. But in this, he says, "No, my friend, the way to have good and safe government is not to trust it all to one, but to divide it among the many, distributing to everyone exactly the functions he is competent to. Let the national government be entrusted with the defense of the nation and its foreign and federal relations. The state governments with the civil rights, the laws, police, and administration of what concerns the state generally, the counties with the local concerns of the counties, and each ward direct the interests within itself. It is by dividing and then subdividing these republics from the great national one down through all of its subordinations until it ends in the administration of every man's farm by himself, by placing under every one what his own eye may superintend, that all will be done for the best." And I think it kind of nails it. And that is exactly, you know, that it needs to come down ultimately to your local community. I mean, that's you should have the most control there, and then you move up. Too
right.
often we try to change things from the top down. And
right.
It's just there's no long-term change in that.
No. No, it's not. And there's no possible way in my mind to do that at this time. It's going to happen. You know, states are going to have to say, first of all, the people of the state are going to have to, and that's why we're here, the people of any given state, the state of Missouri in this particular case, are going to have to decide this is what state sovereignty means and this is what we want. And then they're going to have to, as a people, be ready to stand up and say, we are the sovereign state of Missouri, and this is the way it's going to be. And you see this happening, Kevin, now, whether you agree with legalization of marijuana or not. You see states now, right in the face of the Federal Controlled Substances Act, saying, okay, we're going to have legal marijuana in this state.
No, that's correct.
And you don't see the federal government doing a whole hell of a lot about it.
Well, and again, they're very choosy on what they act on and what they don't. You know, what's crazy is you have something that I feel is perfectly within the rights of the states, the authority of the states. Again, it's that same term that's used so often. But, you know, like Arizona being sued by the federal government because of their immigration laws. You know, that's insanity. All of that is insanity, and here you've got right now, we have a government in place and that is not enforcing laws on the books because they don't agree with them. They create law out of air, just out of thin air. They enforce things that really were not created constitutionally, and they don't enforce things they don't agree with. I mean, that, my friend, is a banana republic. I mean, there is no difference between us and Venezuela right now. Look at Obamacare itself. It's been changed at least, major provisions at least 15 times without an act of Congress.
The latest change is he's saying that you folks who had your policies canceled, you can go out, buy yourself a catastrophic plan without paying the penalty now that doesn't cover all the things that Obamacare insists be covered.
There were multiple changes on the dates of implementation. You had the businesses kicked off for a year. You know, I kept hearing that Obamacare was a law of the land, but it's not.
Yep.
It's not treated like a law. You know, one of the biggest dividers between us and England was the fact that many of their laws were not written; they were decreed,
mm-hmm.
and we have that now. I mean, we've always had written law, but now it's decreed.
That's right.
We get law that is spoken that's not even it's not even fully written yet.
And may be different tomorrow than it is today.
It may be different tomorrow. We have no idea. You have no way
That's
to plan.
Right.
Now, as far as the insurance companies, and here's the danger in that, and I say that to everybody that may be supportive of this president, you know, you cannot accept these policies because you may be a member of the Democratic Party or you support the president. You just cannot blindly. It hurts everyone because, you know what, you're not always going to be in control unless you've got a dictatorship, unless there's just an assumption of power. You've got to keep your own in check, just as we do, just as anyone does. You've got to keep your own in check.
And the best way to keep it in check is to keep that power at the lowest possible level.
Absolutely.
As is to keep that power at the state. But you don't get, and this is so important when you want to fight the fight of state sovereignty, because it goes right back to that intellectual honesty you were talking about. You don't get to say the state of Missouri rules, the federal government is subservient to the states, and then go crying to the federal government when the state of Missouri does something you don't like.
I understand your point. We undermine ourselves so often because we take an argument of principle, and when the ends justify the means, we abandon it.
Right.
And,
you know, so if the state of Missouri passes a law that says gay people can get married, or if the state of Missouri passes a law that says gay people can't get married, or if the state of Missouri passes a law that says you can carry a concealed weapon, or if the state of Missouri passes a law that says you can't have more than 7 bullets in a gun, then if you are the person who's going to argue states' rights, if you are the patriot who's going to argue that the federal government is overbearing, don't dare go crying to the Bill of Rights for relief from the state of Missouri.
That's a very good point. too often people want it on both ends. And like you said, that was a restriction from the federal government. Now, if they want to argue the laws, the federal laws that have been enacted to control firearms and their Second Amendment rights, they have an argument there.
Absolutely. But, no federal law that restricts guns or ammunition is constitutional. I don't care what the damn Supreme Court says. I don't care what the Congress of the United States says. Here's the Constitution. The letters are written right there in black and white.
Absolutely.
No federal law. And this is, I get into this argument all the time with people about the schools and prayer in the schools and teaching God in the schools. The First Amendment is pretty clear. And the First Amendment, as we've just said, is a one-way amendment. It does not apply to, in fact, Kevin, back in the early days of this country, states had state religions.
Absolutely.
They used the tax man to collect tithe for their church.
Yes, they did. Now you had huge opposition to that, including Thomas Jefferson, but the bottom line is that the states and those communities and those regions, the local governing forces did. They were certainly
But that opposition worked the way it's supposed to work, and those things went away state by state by state. They didn't go away by edict of the federal government, because the federal government could not establish nor prohibit a religion. Couldn't establish it or prohibit it to a person, and the federal government could not establish or prohibit it to a state. The states own the federal government. Now, If you want to have a prayer in the public schools, if you want to have the teaching of the nativity in the third grade classroom, you're not going to get an argument from me the day, and I look forward to this day, that we say we don't want any more federal money in our school.
Yeah, and therein lies the crux, right there. We invite all of this in. When we accept the funding, whenever we go to the government, it's much like the kids or anything else, Dave. I mean, I learned early. When I was 15 years old, I got a job cleaning carpets for $2.35 an hour. It wasn't a whole lot, but I could work about 20 hours during the school week, during the evenings and so forth, and on a Saturday. You know what my chances of going roller skating or doing something else? You know how much greater the opportunities for me to do what I wanted to do other than to go to mom and dad and say, hey, can I do this? And by the way, I need 10 bucks.
Yeah, absolutely.
It went up drastically. My freedom was much greater. And in turn, we do the same thing with the federal government, and also with the state. If you want less input into your life, then you become more independent,
right?
And you rely less on others.
Yep. I mean, if you want to control your child's education 100%, every I and every T, then homeschool. If you want to have just a little bit less control, then go to a private school. If you want to send your kid to a public school, then accept the amount of control of your kid's education that belongs with the community that's educating your child. So if you want to pay for that school district by school district, then that's where the control lies. If you want to pay for that school state by state, then that's where the control lies. And if you want to pay for that school with the federal government, then all of a sudden, the principal of the school is an agent of the federal government, and you can't pray in school.
It's right back to everything, Dave, whether it be hospitals, whether it be doctors, whether it be all these different situations, whatever. And again, the federal government isn't just giving out funds because of their kind heart. They are giving out funds for control.
That's right.
There's no ifs, ands, and buts about it. If you want to break it down to even the tax code, and I know that, we both favor a drastic change in the direction of the tax code to the fair tax, because to me it's the only way that I see that. Did you know that the current tax code that we have, that is what, probably 90,000 pages plus, that tax code started out as a 4% flat tax.
Yep.
That being a 4% flat tax, look at what it's evolved to. Now we have many that are turning around and saying, what we need to do is we need to go back to a flat tax. Well, that's not going to solve the problem, because what we're dealing with is human nature. And, Dave, what happens is the federal government tells people, hey, you know what? We need to give you guys a tax break for this behavior. We need to give you guys a tax break for this or that. And who's going to refuse it? Majority of the people will not. You know what they'll do? They'll file a long form. And if you think about it, even a long form, if you're filing a short form, what's the government's reach into your life? It's only whenever we claim our deductions that they can start nailing us for things, unless we're just flat not paying taxes. And just like whenever we see posts from MSNBC and these other entities that are coming right out and saying that your children, that the only way this country is going to move forward is if people realize that their children are not their children. They're they're part of the populace. They don't own their children. Well, the only reason they can say that is because we get tax write-offs for our kids. And
yep,
that's exactly the reason that they use. They'll turn around and they'll say that we have invested in those children, and therefore we have the right to have input into the direction and into their lives. That's the excuse they use. Whenever you look at all of these different things, it's whenever we get tax write-offs for it, that's whenever we invite the government in. They do the same thing with our retirement plans, don't they, Dave?
They do.
Now all of a sudden they're saying, you know what? We need to take all these private individual 401ks and use them for public service things, including allowing these controllers to invest in public projects. Whenever they would be, you know, hammered by law for making risky investments in any other means.
Yep.
So what we're doing? What's their number one thing they say? Well, you've enjoyed the tax breaks of these write-offs that you've gotten from your personal account, so that the government has an investment in those accounts. We know that's bull hockey. The only thing that they've got is a tax deferred situation, which means they're going to pay taxes down the road. But in the meantime, that's enough of a doorway for the federal government to jump in there and say that you owe us. You owe
yep.
us. You invited us into your house. You left your door unlocked, and you know what? We're here to stay. And the only way to get around that is to get rid of tax write-offs, to go to a fair tax, and that is the only, really, one of the only prayers, in my opinion, outside of divine intervention, that this government has to try to pull out of this thing. Sorry for going on a spiel.
No, that's all right. It's time to take a break anyway, and we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about state sovereignty and maybe even a little bit more about the fair tax and what the government buys from you when they give you things.
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have, because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families, and recognize that kids belong to whole communities. Once it's everybody's responsibility and not just the households, then we start making better investments.
That is exactly what I was talking about, Dave.
What's that?
Who is that? Melissa?
Yeah, Melissa Leach. Not Melissa.
Yeah.
Melissa
Perry. Melissa Harrison.
Melissa Harris Perry.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're having some real problems here with the technical
with the audio
tonight. Yeah, I'm not. It might be my browser. I mean, I know we're live now, and we shouldn't be because we should be listening to the next
correct
bumper.
I didn't even hear it until I muted my mic. So
yeah.
I agree with you. I mean, I doubt if the listening audience heard it. But
well, I know they're hearing us now, and I'm getting no response at all from the.
I didn't hear it either until I muted my mic. When I muted my mic, I heard the message. So
okay. I'm going to.
I believe that it's just some technical difficulties.
I believe so too, and I'm going to
can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
Okay, we're back. I think, I'm in the process
now. I believe so.
Now.
I did.
Yeah.
I did hear that.
Good. see that
technology.
That works a lot better when the some people talk who don't have any brains comes right after Melissa Harris Perry.
It kind of hurts, Dave. I'm on a show with you.
Oh, no, come on.
I'm just kidding. But some people probably feel that way when I'm speaking up. I do have a tendency to get on a rant whenever it comes to just things that seem just lunacy all the way around.
Yeah.
I remember, and I can't find the material for it. I'm going to try to look it up, but there was a case back a handful of years ago where there was a doctor, I believe, out of New York that had put together family plans. And what he did was he started charging a monthly set fee, depending on how many members you had in your family and everything, for doctor services. And what it did was, just like many other things, whether, you know, it be a chiropractor, sometimes we'll do that. You get some other situations. But what it would do is it would the family would have no fees per visit or anything, and it covered a multitude of different services. And what they did was they just made that monthly payment to the doctor, and then, you know, they made appointments whenever they needed to and came in, and he provided some services. And you had the federal government that sued him at the time and made him stop his practice because they said that he was violating insurance law. He was acting like an insurance agency in his policies. Now, there again, you got a possible solution in this thing in the private sector where you've got people that are trying to be creative in the funding and the financing, and you've got the federal government that's stepping in because of special interests and saying you can't do that.
Yep. So.
But.
So what do we do?
I'm sorry.
What do we do?
What do we do? Well, there is no doubt that our federal government isn't an overreaching. They've gone way beyond the enumerated powers. But again, you know, we have that double-edged sword that we want to call them in, just like you said. We want them to step in whenever locally we have statutes that we don't like or agree with. And what we need to do is, you know, again, deal with the local stuff. The only way that it could work, state sovereignty, as we speak of it, because really, I mean, regardless, you hit it on the head whenever you was talking about marijuana sales, everything else, regardless of your feelings on these things. These are states' issues, not federal government. And what the only way that this will work is if there are absolutely no federal government bailouts. You know, therefore, whenever somebody enacts, just like right now in Colorado, they don't know if it's going to be a boom or a bust. They're expecting a boom, but here's the whole thing. They don't know if there's any unintended consequences that are going to come out of this. Now, you know, we if it's not within the federal government's power and we enact laws upon ourselves locally, then we should be able to reap the benefits of that, or we should face the repercussions. And
right.
as long as these states, whether it's California or anyone else, acts irresponsible with their finances and budgeting and everything else, and they continue to do so, and down the road you look for a federal bailout, that doesn't work. You know,
that's right.
And the only way that that's going to work is if these states are going to be able to make it or break it on their own.
And that's the point of state sovereignty and defining it in my mind. And that's what I hope people get and understand, Kevin, is, you know, it's all well and good to say over and over and over again and to demand and demand and demand over and over and over again that the federal government is too big, that the state is the sovereign, that the state is where the power lies, but you darn well better be ready for what you're asking for. You darn well better be ready for the fact that when we can make the EPA go away, somebody's going to be telling you you can't dump toxins in Lake of the Ozarks. You know, when we make the FDA go away, somebody is going to have the power to tell you that you can't mix ginger and nutmeg together in your kitchen and sell it as a cure for cancer. You know,
no, that's true.
You know, when we make the federal government go away, we better be prepared for the fact that the state of Missouri is not going to let every lunatic have a gun.
No, there's always going to be restrictions put at the local level, but you know what? That's how it's designed to be.
Yeah,
and I'm good with that.
Yeah,
because again, if we're left to our own ill decisions or good decisions, we're either going to prosper or we're going to face the repercussions.
And when we are left, when we are left with that, when we are left with the, and I believe sometimes we get a little bit too holy with ourselves. Too wrapped up in our, I hate to say patriotism, but patriot has become as diluted a word as hero anymore. We get too wrapped up in this I'm a patriot thing, and we say that it's all about the stupid voters. And sometimes I'm thinking, if we can only get this thing untopsy-turvied, if we can only get this thing back in the proper order, if we can only get the pyramid back to the way it's supposed to be, with the foundation being held by the state and local governments, then people will first stop feeling powerless. And when the state passes some numbnuts thing like, you know, seven bullets in a gun, then people will feel again that they have the power to fix things.
Correct.
And
it's mandated from the federal level, they do not.
That's right. That's right. And so it becomes kind of a reverse argument sometimes to say, well, if these people would get their head out of their ass and vote for constitutional people, well, if we could get the power back to Jefferson City, where people feel they have some control, they would take more interest.
Right. No, they would. Whenever people feel like something is a helpless situation or that all of their efforts matter not, then there is. And that's another reason for this. These aren't dumb people that we're talking about. These power, I mean, it's human nature that grabs a hold of people. I mean, it's natural that there be a desire for that power. And it's much easier to hold on to at the federal level than it is the local level. Therefore, they want to make people feel like they're helpless. I hate to say it.
Yeah.
It's a fact. It helps them retain power.
Yep, it does. And then there's the matter of just the efficiency of the money. You know, if you bring things back down to the state level, now, along with state sovereignty, here's something that people aren't ready for. You know, when we quit letting the federal government, allowing the federal government to monitor our environment and to monitor our drug cabinet and to monitor our TV stations and to monitor our radios, when we quit allowing the federal government to dictate our education, we better be ready for the fact that those things still cost money.
They do. But here's the thing. I do feel like that is a violation of the Constitution. You know, because, again, we're talking about it being federally implemented.
Right.
And even education. I mean, looking at the Constitution, you know how many times I found education in it? Even the word education?
None.
Zero.
Darn. You know,
it's something that is left to the states.
Yes.
Not anymore.
But, see, people think that what's going to happen is you're going to pay more taxes, not less taxes.
Especially initially. You know, initially that's the case.
And for quite a while.
For quite a while.
The first $1 trillion a year of budget that we cut from the federal government is only less money borrowed.
Right. That's true.
So.
It's you're not paying anything off. All you're doing is just not borrowing as much.
That's right.
So here's another quote that I thought was pretty cool from Thomas Jefferson's inaugural address. And this is from March 4th, 1801. With all these blessings, what more is necessary to make us happy and a prosperous people? Still one more thing, fellow citizens, a wise and frugal government, which shall restrain men from injuring one another, shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor the bread it has earned. This is the sum of good government, and this is necessary to close the circle of our felicities. And, you know, I mean, all you got to do is read some of the writings of these guys. They were sharp as can be, and you can know and understand their intent. Even Madison.
That's right.
I mean, all of them. Whenever we're looking at, it's still, so how do we do this, Dave? What we're saying is that the federal government has reached beyond its constitutional authority, not rights, constitutional authority.
Correct.
And they've been allowed to do so because, you know what, we accepted the checks.
We
stood up and invited them in the front door. So that being said, now how do you kick someone out who's paying the rent? Would that be accurate?
That's pretty much it. And you're going to pretty much have to do it, in my mind, the way they did it the first time, and that is to say, we're going to get together, we're going to have a meeting. We're the parents, you're the kids. We're going to decide, and you're going to do, and here's the way it's going to be. And we're going to talk about that a little bit next week. That's on the agenda. It's the Convention of the States is where we're going to head with that, the Article 5 Convention. How do we get state sovereignty back? You can do it one state at a time. I mean, each state could stand up like Colorado is doing and say, okay, well, but you've got to do that with every issue, and then you've got to do it with every federal agency, and then you've got to do it 50 times.
Now, here's the thing. They could stand up and say that. They could pass the laws, everything else. It doesn't mean that federal agents couldn't enforce that federal law as it's written. Am I wrong on that?
Well, that's going to come to a head in Missouri if they pass this Second Amendment Preservation Act. We're going to find out.
They've done it with some of this legalization of marijuana in some of these states. They've still had federal enforcement at times of busts, but the local authorities in the states are not investing any dollars or manpower in enforcing the federal law in those cases. But that's where the constitutional crisis is going to come in, because whenever they're enforcing these laws that have been okayed, or the opposite has been enacted in the local level, that's where things are going to get dicey.
Wow, yeah, I'm interested in reading that. I'm interested in reading some cases. Have any of those been to the federal appeals courts yet?
Well, see, that's where one of the things, and that's where the Justice Department a lot of times will come in. And just like in the case of Arizona, again, we have a state that's certainly acting within its authority, but what we've got is a federal government that is not enforcing things at a federal level, and they're suing the state because they're trying to enforce it, a federal law, at a state level. So that's one of the ones that really make you shake your head. In other words, the federal government isn't investing in the enforcement of the law, so they are not following through on a lot of their duties that is written. And then the state is saying, you know what we're going to do? We're going to take the federal law, and we're going to enforce it. And then you have the federal government stepping in and saying, you know what, we're suing you. You can't do that. That's a federal authority. And it's insane. I mean, so we'll have to see how all this stuff plays out through the courts on many fronts. But it's along the same principle, but it's the opposite side of the coin in this case. You know, here we've got the state enforcing something. Now, there's at a local level, if you've got federal law and a state doesn't agree with it or has legislation that is an opposite, and the state doesn't enforce it, the federal law at the local level, then the federal government's only recourse is to enforce it themselves. In other words, to hire the law enforcement and actually go through the expense and the difficulties of enforcing it and bringing charges from a federal level.
Right.
So those are all things that, you know, we're seeing that's starting to blossom. And we'll see. Unfortunately, it's gonna fall down to federal courts. I mean, it's
another thing that has to be tamed.
Absolutely, absolutely. Why don't we look at?
We'll be right back.
They told me that you had gone totally insane. And that your methods were unsound. Are my methods unsound? I don't see any method at all.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
For 7 years I dwelt in the loose palace of exile, playing strange games with the girls of the island. Now I have come again to the land of the fair and the strong and the wise. Brothers and sisters of the pale forest, children of night, who among you will run with the hunt? Now night arrives with her purple legion. Retire now to your tents and to your dreams. Tomorrow we enter the town of my birth. I want to be ready.
Do you want to be ready? If you want to be ready, you need to be paying attention to what's going on. You need to be joining Missouri Grassroots Coalition. You need to be following this year's elections. You need to be out there working that 100-square-block area that we talked about. You need to be putting your man or your woman in Jefferson City this time around. Okay, Kevin, we've talked a little bit about state sovereignty. We've talked about what we think it is. Tomorrow night, we're going to delve a little bit into how we get it, how we go about getting back to where we were. I'm really excited about next week, Kevin. We got a couple of great guests coming along as we travel on down this state sovereignty path. On Friday next week, we got Lloyd Sloan coming. Lloyd is kind of the national expert on the state repeal amendment, and he is of the mindset. He is also an advocate for Article 5 convention, adamantly so, and he is of the mindset, and I tend to agree with him that we don't go do this until we have in mind the specific amendments that we want to get out of it. We don't just go into this meeting and have a prayer and come away from that with some divine vision as to what we should be doing. We don't go there at all without a firm idea of what amendments we want and quite specifically. And one of the ones that Lloyd's been working on for a decade now is the state repeal amendment. And we're going to talk about that in some detail next week. And then on the Saturday night show, Mike Moon is coming along. And Mike, if you folks haven't been following, was the guy who represented Missouri at the very recent convention of the states meeting. It was a group of legislators from many states who got together up at Mount Vernon, not the one in Missouri, and they talked about how to go about getting this thing done, starting with establishing a rules committee, and we'll let Mike tell you all about it next Saturday night. Kevin, you know, we didn't do too well this year with the Secret Santa thing, and I don't feel slighted by that because nobody did well this year.
That's correct. No, that's true.
But we're getting our usual head start on next year. What we did do, we came up with a very small sum of money from five or six different donors, and we were wrestling around with how to divvy this up, and all of a sudden a need arose. The conservative talk show guy from our local station called, wondered if we still had anything going with the Secret Santa, and someone who they were familiar with down there had come across a tragedy. It was 3 days before Christmas. A mother of two children had taken her own life. And these two children, 2 days before Christmas, ended up with the grandmother, who had no money to do anything for them. Barely wasn't sure she was going to be able to continue to even feed and house them. And so we just went ahead and threw it into that project. Like we said, folks, we don't ask the person's politics. We don't ask the person's why the people are in the circumstances they're in. There's some children out there who are in some circumstances through no fault of their own, and that's what Secret Santa excuse me, is all about. It's it's something that we try to start early in the year, like right now. And the reason we do that is because we know, and this year, we know from experience of this year. Excuse me, I'm just getting over this cold, Kevin. But
yeah, it's been wicked. A lot of people have had it.
We know from the experiences of this year, you know, that that coming to you in even October and November and December and begging for money is hard for us, and it's hard for you. It's the worst time of the year for us to beg you to give us money. So we ask you to get into the spirit of Christmas just shortly after you've gotten out of the spirit of Christmas for this year.
Before you receive that first visa.
That's
statement.
Right. We ask you to just give us $5 or $10, maybe a couple of times a year. And that will all add up by the end of the year. So what we try to do, we try to stretch our begging season out so that we can hit a point in there somewhere where it's good for you. So it's just go to
our cup. We just come back
right.
More often.
That's right. So do it, folks. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and up in the top menu there, you'll see the Secret Santa button. Click on that, and when you get to the Secret Santa page, you can read everything I just said about what it is. And then on that page, there's a link to PayPal, and you can send us, send us a dollar. Nothing's too big or too small. Send us a dollar or $100. Send us $5 four times a year, whatever you can do. Missouri Grassroots Coalition has zero overhead. None. Nobody gets a salary. Nobody gets paid. The donations you send in do not pay for this radio programming. Every penny you send goes to this one worthy cause, 100%.
Even if you don't like Dave or myself, you know, it doesn't benefit us. It benefits somebody that's in need at the time.
Yeah.
So that's a... You know, and Dave, this kind of goes along with what we've been talking about all night, and that is, again, you know, this is the best way. If nobody is going to be in assistance, there's only two different outcomes. One is that the people do without, or two, that they seek assistance from the government.
Yep.
So, yeah, and you know, that's another thing. I mean, it's another way, you know, to step up to the plate and
try right.
to grab a hold of some goodwill, let's just say, and not depend on the government to burden or shoulder the burden.
So I'm Dave, and that guy sitting over there, that's Kevin. Go ahead, Kevin.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, on the local front, there was a police department here in St. Louis that went out on a call, and it was 2 days before Christmas. There was a heated discussion, I guess a domestic dispute, and whenever the policeman was in there trying to sort everything out, he noticed that there was no tree, there was no presents, there was nothing, and there was six kids in the household. So he had brought that back to the police department. And they started a toy drive 2 days before Christmas, and those six children got an average of 20 gifts apiece.
Wow!
And And this is, you know, again, like Dave said, nobody was making a judgment call. Why didn't they have it? Nobody is making a judgment call, you know, on anything else with that particular situation, except for the kids were not going to have a traditional Christmas.
Right.
And they stepped up.
Yep. And we don't ask any circumstances either when we say, you know, that when we go look for layaways to pay off, we don't pay off coffee tables and things like that. We pay off toys and toys only. This is for the children who, regardless of the circumstances, regardless of why those circumstances are there, those children do not pay the price for whatever it is. This is for kids, and it's for kids only. Enough about Kevin and me. We want to go ahead and get a little promo in here for the rest of the crew.
Absolutely.
On Tuesday nights every week, Cynthia Davis comes along with a show called Homefront. Cynthia is a good, strong conservative. Has run for office in the state of Missouri as a member of the Constitution Party. Has served in office in the state of Missouri in the state house as a member of the Republican Party. And aside from being smart as a whip and as conservative as they come, she's entertaining as hell. Funny woman with a wit as sharp as a whip. And
she doesn't have a whole lot in common with any of my programs.
No, me either. But Cynthia is informative and entertaining, and she always, I don't know how she does it, she gets the best guests in the world. So catch that on Tuesday nights, folks. It's Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Wednesday night, as if Tuesday isn't enough, along comes Lisa Payne Nager, the homeschooling mom from St. Charles, with her Culture Vigilante show. You don't know what it's like to hear a woman scorned until you've tuned in on a Wednesday night and listened to Lisa Payne Nager hold some politicians' feet to the fire. She is a fireball. She is out there to take names and kick butts. And the Culture Vigilante is on your side when it comes to liberty and getting prosperity back and maintaining the values that separate the conservative culture from the liberal culture, the conservative mindset from the liberal mindset. And that's a show you don't want to miss. And then, of course, on Friday and Saturday, you'll get a return of the Dave and Kevin parade. And next week,
want it or not,
next week, as I said, with two explosive guests on Friday night, Lloyd Sloan, and on Saturday night, Mike Moon from Fresh from the. And Mike, by the way, just as a bonus, will already be by then 3 days into the new legislative session, so we might tap into his brain for what's going on up there too. But Kevin, in closing, we've pretty much decided that there's ice in Antarctica.
Yes, we have.
That Obamacare sucks,
and it's just begun,
and that state sovereignty means that we as a people, in order to maintain power as close to individual power as possible, have decided that the bulk of the governing power belongs with the state, and that states cede to the centralized federal government only those powers enumerated in Article 1, Section 8 of the United States Constitution. And some of those specific powers, of course, are the power to declare and conduct war with foreign countries, the power to make treaties with foreign countries, the power to coin money and regulate money, the power to solve disputes between states, things that you just can't let each state do willy-nilly on their own. You can't just have each state making separate treaties with foreign governments.
Well, and also even amongst ourselves, if because the richer, more powerful state would have a dominance over the smaller states,
right?
If they had no protection.
And so we've decided what state sovereignty means, and next week we're going to begin a series of several shows that talk about how we go about resurrecting a position where the state is sovereign and the federal government is subservient to the states. What do you got in closing there, Kevin?
I just want to thank you once again for inviting me in the front door, Dave. Appreciate it. Always enjoy conversations with you. Friendly banter. And I usually learn an item or two during the discussion. So, but the one thing I did learn that, you know, you had mentioned conservative, strong conservative. I'd always thought that I fit that mold. But the more I started looking at things, the more I also found myself more along the lines of a libertarian with a small L. And,
right.
I'm more interested in trying to be intellectually honest and not just the ends justify the means or me trying to impose my will upon others. Not just because I agree with it, I'm going to help push it along, even though it's foundationally not accurate with my beliefs. So,
that's right. This is the beauty of a republic and a constitution, of a constitutional republic, and that is we hear elected officials who go to Washington, D.C. and say, I'm going to vote my conscience. That's Claire McCaskill. I don't give a shit what you think, people of Missouri. I'm going to vote my conscience. And then we hear people who get elected and go to Washington, D.C. or Jefferson City and say, I'm going to vote for whatever the people want. Well, you know, that sounds pretty darn good, doesn't it, Kevin? But the beauty of a constitutional republic is I don't want that guy voting for what the people want, if what the people want isn't constitutional.
Right.
You
then
know,
what you've got is mobocracy, right?
That's absolutely right. And that's the beauty of a constitution. You know, that's the trouble that we started this show talking about, Kevin, is the constitution isn't worth a dime if it changes every day or even every year. It's got to be that I can send this guy to Washington, D.C. to govern me, knowing that he has a rule book.
Yes, it's not a living, breathing document.
That's right.
What it is it's a hard line of black and white that has within it the means to change if it's needed. In the meantime, it's not easy to change.
Right.
And that's the beauty of it.
It is. It is. And with that beauty, Kevin, good night. Thanks.
Good night,
I always enjoy it. Good night, people. God bless y'all.
God bless America.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.